ahead. Now comes Sidney Crosby. Crosby tries to dance through. Crosby up with it there. Punched along to Jerome Iginla. Crosby scores! It's over! The gold medal to Canada!
Right there on NBC5 Chicago as Team Canada getting the job done against Team USA yesterday. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Pleased to be joined by Mike Babcock, the coach of Team Canada and also the Red Wings coach. He joins us on ESPN 1000. Coach, thanks for being with us.
Hey, no problem, guys.
What impressed you most about the way your team played throughout the Olympics?
Well, I just thought we got better each and every game. You know, obviously we met a tough American team that beat us earlier in the round robin. I thought Miller for them was fantastic, but it just kept getting better. And, you know, winning an Olympic gold in your home country with your fans, with the excitement in this city, was a dream come true, and our guys were able to handle pressure and get the job done.
With that said, Coach, how significant was the pressure that you were feeling as the head coach of this team?
Well, you know, it's like anything. Anytime you're a head coach, there's pressure. I think when you got this opportunity and you know it may never come again in your time, I think that puts a little more heat on you. And the big thing is U.S., you got four sports or five sports. In Canada, we got one sport. And we're proud of that, and we want to be the best. And once again, hanging on to the top prize there by winning the gold medal, I think, is a great indication.
Mike Babcock, the coach of Team Canada, with us on Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Coach, I'll talk a little bit about Ryan Miller and the performance he had throughout the Olympics as a goaltender.
Well, I thought he was the most dominant player in the tournament. He played real, real well. He was big and square. We needed to get to him and get some second chances. I thought we were able to do that. I thought in particular in overtime he made some huge saves before we eventually got to him. And, you know, a player like Sidney Crosby, that's what the great players do. Even when things haven't been going his way for about three games, he found a way to get the job done. And in the end, you know, he gets that to his resume, the game-winning goal in the Olympics to get Canada the gold.
Coach, talk about some of your players that you coached that obviously you see Taves, you see Seabrook, you see Duncan Keith, but was your image or your impression of them enhanced even more having been their coach recently?
Well, I thought Taves and Nash were our best forwards down the stretch in the tournament for sure, really played well. I thought Niedermeyer from Anaheim on the back end showed why he's won everything already. He really stepped up and got better each and every game, and I thought was a real quiet, composed leader for us, and in the end, a big part of why we won.
Mike Babcock with us on Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Tom and I were talking earlier about with the Wings taking on the Avalanche that's going to be on Versus tonight. That's got to be a brutal schedule after all of the emotion, everything with the Olympics. Right back to work the next day, huh?
Well, we just landed here. You know, Paul McLean and Brad McCrimmon will be running our morning skate here today. But let's be honest, guys, is we're in a battle for our life. And one of the things, just for Red Wings fans, we're probably fortunate and sweet locked out early, and so did Pavel. Those guys will be fresh. Our guys are freshened up. We're going to be as healthy as we've been all year. We're a big believer if we can get in, we're going to have an opportunity. But our top guys got to elevate their game, and we all got to be better and more consistent. We need to get on a good run here.
Did Coach Quenneville call you to complain at all about Duncan Keith's minutes in the Olympics, Coach?
You know, you and I are good friends. I talked to him about his players prior, and, you know, what an experience for those guys. When you look at the way Kane played and Keith, Seabrook, and then obviously Taves, you know, they got to be thinking they're set up for a shot this year, and I'm hoping we can get in and get in the way of that.
Coach, congratulations on winning the gold medal. It was a terrific game, and we appreciate your time as always.
Have a good day, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
This is Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Let's go to Hulk Hogan, the most famous wrestler of all time. Hulkster, how are you?
Waddle Mania, brother. What's up? It's a beautiful Sylvia. Hey, you guys playing that music, you're stirring me up. When I hear that real American music, makes me feel like I've got that spring in my step where I can run fast and jump high. I feel like I'm about 20 years old again, getting ready to body slam Andre the Giant, brother.
Any advice for the little Hulkamaniacs?
All I can tell you is what I've been telling these kids for 30 years, and it works. Through good times, bad times, the 90s with an egg when nobody knew who the good guys and the bad guys were. It all goes full circle. And I can tell the Hulkamaniacs that train, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, and if you believe in yourself, brother, you can attract and have anything you want in this life.
I am a real American.
Oh, God.
Is he taking Sammy Sosa's vitamins? Whose vitamins?
Well, lately it's Geritol. Because he's
going to be back in the ring, he was telling us.
He's north of 50, so it's going to be Geritol.
Is that strictly a financial decision on his behalf, or is wrestling something that gets in your blood, you just can't ever get it out?
Hulk Hogan on Waddle and Sylvie last week. You are listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Jonathan Hood sitting in. Our phone number, 312-332-ESPN. Hogan makes me sick.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I was a Ric Flair guy growing up.
Okay.
That's why. Because you had a choice.
Yeah.
It's kind of like in my neighborhood. You had to be either a Cub fan or Sox fan growing up on the southeast side. It's like, you Cub fan or Sox fan while I have like five fists over my head. Like, Cub fan or Sox fan? And I was kind of, you know, delayed in the answer. And it was kind of like, Cub fan or Sox fan?
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, Sox fan.
Same with your wrestlers?
Same thing. You had to be a Hogan guy or a Flair guy. And I was a Ric Flair guy.
Both are in their mid-50s now, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And still wrestling. They're going to be wrestling Monday, as a matter of fact, in Orlando. It's unbelievable. You are listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Still to come, an hour from now, we're going to hear from Jay McGuire, Mark McGuire's brother, who wrote the book Mark McGuire and the Truth Behind Baseball's Worst Kept Secret. We'll hear from Jay and find out his thoughts on why he wrote the book coming up an hour from now. But right now, we go to Darren Sharper, who has a Super Bowl ring from the New Orleans Saints. He joins us on Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Darren, it's Tom and Jonathan. How are you?
Doing good. How you fellas doing?
We're doing very well.
Well, first of all, congratulations on a Super Bowl title. This team, Darren, last year, a year before, was 8-8. The following year, you're world champions. Did you see that as being a distinct possibility, your first day of training camp?
Well, I'd like to thank you, Tom, for someone that really knows football, for playing in Chicago so long and battling me and debating me on the NFL Network a couple years ago. I know that you're very a connoisseur and a very intellect when it comes to football.
I am.
So I appreciate that. But no, I couldn't see that coming. You know, no one could have predicted us to kind of win in the fashion we're winning, starting off 12-0, and then, you know, hitting a little bump in the road, but continuing to play good once we got to the playoffs and winning in the fashion that we won. You couldn't have predicted that, but I knew we had a good team, but it was good. It was good that it worked out the way it did.
Darren, you played in the city. We've seen the clips on television. We saw the Super Bowl. But describe for us what it means to New Orleans. What does it mean that you guys were able to win and be Super Bowl champions?
You know, it's just huge for the city to be able to energize them and to kind of give them a little bit more breath of life because they've been beaten down for so many years. Not only the organization not winning for so long, but just the city and all that's gone through. For them to just be able to wake up each and every morning and just be excited about being able to watch their team and to see their team doing so well, and then to end it off the right way by winning the Super Bowl. Now everyone can kind of look at New Orleans not as with a little dark cloud over it, but more with a little bit more sun and a little bit more hope, because this should hopefully bring more and more better things to come and improve the economy, improve the city, and improve a lot of things, especially with the Super Bowl coming in 2013. So hopefully this was a launching pad to some good things.
Well, how about you personally? Is your first choice to return to the Saints, or will you sit back and talk to any number of teams? Because if I'm reading correctly, the Saints have said they will not franchise you.
Right. Yeah, they made that decision not to franchise me, and in doing that, I understand that it's going to open up a lot more options, not only for me, but also for the Saints. And everyone here knows that my first option, as it would be with anyone that's won a Super Bowl, is to come back in and try to do it again. You know, I enjoy playing with the guys, but in saying that, I have to weigh all of my options and understand that this is a business. And just like when I decided to come to the Saints, the situation has to be right. And doing that, you have to look at everything, look at every option, because you can't just be closed-minded when it comes to free agency. So to be able to test the market is something that I have the ability to do, and I'm going to weigh all of my options.
Darren Sharper with us on Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. You talk about options. What about the Chicago Bears and Lovie Smith? Is that an option for you?
You know, anywhere is an option. You know, Coach Lovie Smith, I have the utmost respect for him. I've been able to play against him for so many years and see how he's built that program in Chicago. A firm believer in what he's doing up there. Love the Chicago fans. Wherever I go, you want to go to a great fan base. And Chicago has one of the best fan bases of all the teams in the NFL. So that definitely was somewhere that you would love to play, and you know you would enjoy your time playing in Chicago because the city's so great, the fans are great, and also they have a good team.
How detailed were your conversations with the Bears last year, Darren? And did you ever was it ever close? Is Chicago your destination this past season?
You know, last year they were looking for safeties. They have been looking for safeties the last couple of years. And you know, you have discussions. It all comes down to how do you fit the numbers as far as contract-wise, how long do you want to play, and those things. So you have those talks. But before all of that kind of went to the second level, I visited New Orleans, and I was just sold. So that kind of squashed those talks with Chicago.
Well, would you also say that Greg Williams' system maybe fits you better than Lovey's? And do you feel you have the skill set to excel in the cover two, or it's not a system you feel more comfortable in?
You know what? A lot of people have made that analysis as far as comparing cover two to a system that allows me to be more ranging and be more free and be able to attack the football. You know, I went to the Pro Bowl in the cover two system in Minnesota.
Right.
So I feel like I proved I can be successful in any system. I've been in about, if there's any system on defense you could play, I think I've played it. And I think I've been pretty successful in doing that. Now, as far as the numbers, just naturally as far as playing the cover two, I think the numbers as far as interceptions won't be as high as compared to a system that I played with Greg Williams, just for the fact that I'm able to play a lot more different areas of the football field. In a cover two system, you're in one spot most of the time. And if the ball doesn't come your way, you can't go get the ball. So, but you can still be successful in a cover two. So I think I can be successful in any system, depending on, the guys you have around you.
Darren, you played alongside Brett Favre for many years. What's your gut feeling? Do you think you'll be returning next season to Minnesota?
Yeah, you know, I was one that predicted. I was one for one on the Brett Favre comeback out of retirement predictions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I'm going to go two for two. I think he will come back. You know, that number 20 kind of rings in your head a little bit. Speaking from a player that's kind of sets or looks towards the future and how many years you want to play. Playing 20 years is something that Brett, I think, he kind of lay his hat on, saying he played 20 and coming back next year will be that 20th year. Also, the fact that they have a team that's on the cusp of getting to the Super Bowl. They were on the cusp this year. Too bad they ran into the Sharper Shake in New Orleans State.
I was going to say, did you just think that if you let the game go long enough, that sooner or later in the NFC title game, Brett was going to make that mistake, rolling right and throwing left? Was that something that you could have predicted would happen?
No, we couldn't have, because he was playing extremely well that game. He hadn't turned the football over. He got hit a lot, but he kept getting up and had not made any bad decisions up to that point. But I think all of those hits kind of did wear on him, because he said after the game that he don't think he could have ran for the first down, even though it was like partying like the Red Sea for him. But he don't think he could have ran for that first down because he was so beat up.
Yeah.
But I could have predicted that he would have made a mistake because he was playing so well up to that point.
Well, Darren, congratulations on the Super Bowl ring. And my guess is you'll be in Los Angeles doing plenty of television work for the NFL Network, and I hope to cross paths with you this off season.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, Darren.
You got it, Tom. All right, fellas.
This is Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Patrick Kane able to build it right across. Brian Suter has it there. Threw one that rattled around behind. Pavelski there. Slipped one in front. Kane a shot off of the... They score! Zach Parise out of a netball scramble! And the game is tied!
Show me what it's like. The last one standing.
And the horn sounds to end 60 minutes of regulation time. Back ahead now comes Sidney Crosby. Crosby tries to dance through.
Thought we went after it in overtime. We didn't sit back, and we went after it, and we were rewarded.
Crosby up with it there. Punched along to Jerome McGinley. Crosby scores! It's over! The gold medal to Canada!
That was our main goal, is to win this tournament. And anybody in that locker room that's telling you different is lying, because you know, I certainly came in here saying, you know, I'm coming here to win this tournament, win a gold medal, and not a silver medal.
Right there on NBC 5 Chicago, it was the Olympics and a great game as the U.S. losing to Canada 3-2 in overtime.
I asked you the question at the break. How long do you think the buzz would have lasted in this country if the opposite result took place, if the U.S. team would have won?
Well, because we are an ADD society, maybe
guilty.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe
guilty.
Maybe half a day. Because where are you going to have the parade, by the way?
You're not going to have one.
Okay. So then the next news cycle is something else.
Yeah. I mean, certainly and those who were trying to draw the comparison between what occurred in 1980 and the potential for the U.S. team to win the gold this year, I just don't know how anyone could have ever connected those dots. I mean, 1980, the political and social landscape was entirely different than it is now. It was a group of college kids, mm-hmm. true amateurs, playing against a basically a professional team from Russia. You had the angst, the political angst between the two countries. I mean, just night and day, the comparison between the examples. And I just certainly was hoping for the U.S. team to win. I just question whether or not this is something that was going to have legs for an extended period of time.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Jonathan Hood in for Sylvie. Don't forget to email your thoughts right into the inbox. Waddle and Sylvie at ESPNChicago.com. That's where you can find our poll question, by the way, on ESPNChicago.com. Are you happy the Olympics are over? Yes? No? 68% of you say yes. 32% of you say no.
I say no. I enjoyed it. I mean, listen, I don't want this to be something that occurs 365. I mean, there's gotta be a finish to it.
There's a channel for that, by the way. There's Olympic coverage, like Universal Channel. You watch it anytime you want to.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, look, Mom, Torino! Look, Salt Lake City! I hate the Ruskies!
I would watch that. That's something that would inspire me.
Look, Mom, Lillehammer!
I am pleasantly surprised, though, that I stayed as focused and interested in the Olympics as I did. Again, the closing ceremony didn't hit home with me as much as it may with others. But I thought there were so many good stories. The local kid, Evan Lysacek, winning gold. Mm-hmm. The angry Russian and the poor sport Russian that's finished with the silver medal. And
yes.
Some of the things he said. The Canadian skater, the figure skater, the woman who won bronze just mm-hmm. several days after her mom passed away. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many. Shawnee Davis went in the gold again. Sean White was a good story. There were a lot of really good stories this year.
Don't forget, guys, a big event happening. Actually, a couple of big events happening here at ESPN 1000. Bud Light's world's largest pool party. It's Vegas, baby. It's
Vegas, baby. Vegas.
Air travel for you and a guest to Las Vegas 5 days, 4 nights in the Rockstar Room at the Vegas Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Access the ultimate pool with monster-sized TVs to watch the game's poolside. Tickets to an exclusive private event. We are going to announce the winner of this extravagant event at 9:55.
Yes.
Stay tuned.
We have 20 people who qualified all of last week.
Yes.
And the winner of this fantastic trip that you just described is going to be announced at 9:55.
So make sure you're by the radio for that or by your computer, because we're going to announce the winner for the world's largest pool party. Also, TV Madness.
Yes.
Tom Wiles is going to make an appearance. So will Mark Silverman. So will Brian Dalgan.
So will you.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone's got to park the cars. Also, Carmen Yurko and Harry are going to be there as well.
Mark Giangreco has suggested he may stop by. We'll find out.
It's all part of TV Madness, and you can text the number 33776 for Monday, March 1st matchups for TV Madness. Let's see. We're already into the Elite Eight. There's four teams already in. It's Happy Days, Cheers, Seinfeld, and South Park. The number 12 seed was South Park, knocked off by The Sopranos on Friday. Can you believe that?
South Park beat Sopranos pretty handsomely as well.
Wow.
This was not much, but I think that kind of says a lot about who listens to us.
In the 90s bracket. Hey, Mom!
Not a bad thing. I'm not saying that. I'm just meatloaf!
Where's the meatloaf?
Mom! Can you dry clean this silk robe? And give me my nunchucks!
Seinfeld defeating Married with Children handily as well in the 90s bracket. Now, today, you can vote On the Family against the Jeffersons for the 70s bracket. In the 80s bracket, it's The Cosby Show against Family Ties. Now, On the Family and the Jeffersons, that's a tough one right
there. It is. I mean, one show was created by the other. All in the Family was obviously the show that they spun the Jeffersons from.
Yes.
And I think All in the Family wins that, and I think The Cosby Show will absolutely trounce Family Ties.
Well, I would.
Family Ties, does it have that many fans out there?
Yeah, Michael J. Fox, man. Mallory, the young Republican. That was outstanding. That was a good show. But
it
not,
was.
But not as good as the Cosby Show.
Yeah, I think the Cosby Show wins going away.
In the Hood Household, that was on every Technicolor television during that time, every Panasonic television during that time. I mean, the Cosby Show, Thursdays at 7, that was the spot. You had to watch that.
I was shocked at just how quick you were able to tell us when the show was, what night it was, what time it was. You're like a television trivia savant.
Vidiot.
Okay, that's a better way to describe it. I don't know when any of the shows, when was All in the Family on? I know you can catch it on reruns.
I know it was a CBS show. I don't remember exactly what.
But that's in the 70s.
Yes.
Sunday nights? Randy Merkin's telling me Sunday nights.
Could have been Sunday nights, yes.
Were you a Miami Vice guy? Sylvia and I had this conversation, and he thought I was crazy.
No, I was, absolutely.
I mean, we didn't go out. I told the story. You were not allowed to leave your dorm at Boston College until Vice was over.
No, I watched it because it was the coolest show on television.
It was.
I mean, even with a Technicolor television, you just want to see how blue the water was. It was hard to see that. Now, I know you had HD when you were in college back then.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you were in the first ones. But
yeah.
I really enjoyed that show a lot. NBC show, by the way.
Yes.
Oh, Miami Vice.
Fantastic program.
I know it's weird. My mother-in-law also thinks I'm a little weird for that I know the network and the television show. If you tell me the TV show, I'll tell you the network.
I can barely name my four children. I don't know which one is which.
I understand. One thing about Sidney Crosby, I just want to say this before we move over to some Bears conversation. You know what's so odd about the National Hockey League? The new age Wayne Gretzky, Sidney Crosby, the new Canadian hero for some, plays for a small market Pittsburgh. And you would think that a guy like that with that kind of press, especially around the Olympics, would be with the Hawks or with the Rangers or Philadelphia or the Los Angeles Kings. But no, even though he was a hero, he still plays in a small market where a lot of people don't know who he is.
Imagine what think about what he's accomplished so early in his career. Gold medal, Stanley Cup championship. I mean, he's just a tremendous player, obviously. Also someone that I'm sure the NHL is more than happy to have out in front being the face of their league. Just seems to be a fantastic young kid as well.
We want to come out with something, you know, have some sprinkles on it, a little twist to it.
Just like you, Tom.
Yeah.
Jerry Angelo has a kind of a word bag also.
Yeah. Jerry and I are kindred spirits. And I've said it a lot, he is going to be a participant in my man pageant.
Yes.
Where regardless of your, I don't know, success or failure as a general manager or a player, I just like you so much, I just want to have you on the radio and have a conversation.
Just because, right?
Just because you're a good guy. I know that doesn't equate to success in your field or your profession, but there's so many bad guys out there. It's nice to recognize the good guys.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Jonathan Hood in for Sylvie. And our phone number, 312-332-ESPN. Hope that you guys were able in the last 3-4 minutes to kind of look at some of the impact players for the Bears as we do Waddle and Sylvie in this portion of which is brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. Time is running out to purchase a St. Patrick's Day millionaire raffle ticket and be one of the four new millionaires on St. Patrick's Day. Get your St. Patrick's Day millionaire raffle ticket today. All right.
What's your list telling you?
Okay.
Your list of difference maker players.
Right, difference maker impact players on the Bears at this point in time.
Okay.
Okay. Briggs?
Yes.
Cutler?
Yes.
There's a question mark next to Urlacher for 2010.
I would agree with that as well. If healthy, he can be a difference maker.
There's a question mark next to Tillman. It's a question mark there.
I'm a huge Tillman fan. I don't know any longer whether or not he can make a significant difference at that position.
There's a question mark next to Chris Williams also.
There's a huge question mark for me.
I don't know if he could play the position.
I don't either.
So I
certainly couldn't define him as a difference maker.
Okay, so my list stopped right there.
I would say, you know what? I would say Devin Hester is a full-time return man. Could be a difference maker.
Well, the Bears are too smart for that. Why would they do that?
Well, it's funny because we even had Devin on the show during the Super Bowl.
I heard it.
And to hear Devin actually be tremendously honest, when we all know a large portion of his compensation is tied to his production as a receiver, for him to tell everybody that, listen, you know, I know what my bread and butter is. I know what I'm best at, and that's being a full-time return guy, and that he would be willing, and obviously I'm paraphrasing now, he'd be willing to cut back on the receiver reps to be a full-time return guy.
Right.
How do they not see that in the building in Lake Forest? I mean, honestly.
There are no tapes from Miami when he could not play the offense. He couldn't play offense. He wasn't a very good defensive back either at Miami.
No.
Under Larry Coker.
I mean, it's just, it's baffling to look at an organization who takes maybe the most dominant player at his position. We could talk about Tom Brady. We could talk about Peyton Manning. We could talk about some of the great players in the league. Was there anyone in football more dominant at the job they were asked to perform for that stretch of time than Devin Hester? I mean, he's certainly in the team photo, is he not?
Right. They don't get to the Super Bowl without Hester returning those kicks.
So then you try to make him something he isn't. I'm hoping now that Mike March comes in and tries to ask him to do what Oz Akeem did in that greatest show on turf offense.
But what good is it when a Roma Shadu has to take him by the shoulder and say, no, stand here, Devin. Stand here. No,
well,
no,
that's
no,
why
over here.
I understand people who are against bringing Torrey Holt in because he'd be viewed as more of a coach than he would a player.
Mm-hmm.
I still think Torrey Holt, if you add him to this roster, even at the age of 33 going on 34, is probably someone that's going to catch 40 to 45, 50 balls in this system and is arguably your second best receiver. Why not bring him in? This is supposed to be the most difficult offense in football to learn. You have a young group that has obviously struggled to grasp the pass system.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you bring in a guy who's on the cusp of being a Hall of Famer, who's played in the system, not only because he can contribute.
Right.
He's not a number one, I know that, but he could also help these guys on any number of fronts.
Because they're smarter than you. That's why. Because they already got it figured out. Don't you see, Tom? The Bears at Lake Forest already have it figured out. They're all right with their roster. You know, they said they're going to have massive sweeping changes with the coaching staff. Then you pushed Marinelli up in an uncomfortable position probably for him,
yeah,
as defensive coordinator. You bring in Mike Martz, a guy you could have hired 3 days before. Then you bring in Ray Romano's brother, Mike Tice, to run the offensive line. I mean,
which is a good addition.
I think it's a great addition because I love football. Tom, yeah, you know Tom, I love football.
Yeah, but he's an offensive line coach.
Yeah,
I don't need him
football.
To reinvent the wheel.
Football. He's in the football.
That's why I want people to hit people hard.
I want to punch
someone in the mouth.
Punch someone in the mouth.
Move someone off the line.
That's what it's about.
Okay, that's
football
good.
Football for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Good.
I love football.
Excellent.
What do you think of that, Raymond?
I think that's fantastic.
That's
I love
what he,
that.
That's what he
He's
is.
He's Brad Garrett.
That's exactly.
He's Brad Garrett.
Yes,
that's
he is.
Fine. I think that was, you know what, that was this year's Rod Marinelli edition. Going to have the biggest impact of all, the off-season acquisition.
You just love him because he's a football meathead.
Yeah, I do.
That's why.
I don't have a problem with that. That's what you want at the offensive line position
as a coach. I love you, football. Kisses his football, you know, when he goes to bed at night.
No problem with that. No problem with that at all. I don't want him doing my taxes.
No, I don't.
You know, I don't want him really making any decisions that are going to affect my life. I want him coaching the Bears offensive line and coaching them well.
Did I miss anyone as far as impact
no,
players?
No, I don't think so.
That's it?
Who else?
I mean, Hester.
Tommy Harris isn't reliable enough to be an impact player. I like what Alex Brown does. He's a consistent player, not an impact player.
Mm-hmm.
Olin Krutz, consistent player, but no longer an impact player.
That's not good.
No. Hence the reason why I think that... You know, personnel is the biggest issue facing this team.
You name five guys. Five guys right there. I mean, you're not going to win anything with just five guys for impact. I mean, what do you want as a football coach? If you want to get to the Super Bowl, which positions have to be shored up? Not necessarily all pros, but guys that you can rely on. You want to have a good quarterback, right?
Absolutely.
Good running back.
Left tackle on offense. Pass rusher.
Wide receiver?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, and you have to have at least one solid corner that if you have to, you could send him across the field either way to follow the other team's best receiver.
One corner, one defensive end?
Yes.
Or two?
Well, I mean, let's not get greedy.
Okay, so that's six players.
Yeah, you have to have a core of six guys, and they can't all be so-called blue chips, but they gotta be at either blue chips or just a step down.
Okay.
I mean, so maybe that is a difference. I'm not talking all pros.
Mm-hmm.
By difference maker, I mean, you could have guys that are difference makers that are all pros, but I'm not setting the bar that high for being a difference maker. I'm talking about somebody that you could really depend on to play the position at an above average level.
Who are the Bears' impact players going into the 2010 season, email them at waddleandsylvie@espnchicago.com or text them at 33776. We've named five players that are impact players in the Bears for 2010. Did we miss a name? We want you to add on to the list right here on Waddle and Sylvie. And coming up next.
How in the world can you sniff the Rockford Files theme? Jay, don't you feel like you've just been cheated right there?
Yeah, only 2 seconds, but I'm good, though.
Okay. And there we go.
Quality! I need a cigarette after that. Randy, pass me my Marlboro Light. That was great. That's what I'm talking about. Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Indeed, Tom and I love the same show, The Rockford Files, and it's making a comeback. Dermot Mulroney?
Yeah, he was in, My Best Friend's Wedding?
A little Young Guns action. Also, reportedly is stepping into an iconic Private Eye role as the TV updated The Rockford Files.
I'm not so sure I like this. I don't think you'd try to remake magic.
Yes. You consider this magic.
It was okay for them to remake Starsky and Hutch, and Owen Wilson and Ben Stiller I thought were actually funny in the remake.
It's all right.
But that wasn't a classic. The original Starsky and Hutch wasn't a classic at the level, in my humble opinion, that The Rockford Files is. And I'm just concerned that they're going to soil my memory of The Rockford Files by what they put forward.
You say soil?
Soil it.
122 episodes. Thank God for MeTV. You know, I could just flip that on any time, 223 on my cable, and just turn it on and say, you know what? I'm just going to put myself in the 70s just for a little bit. And I'm okay with it.
Does it have a peer in terms of detective or cop shows from that era?
That era of cop show is not even close to what you have today.
Streets of San Francisco. Talking about what was Cannon? Another one?
Yes. Nothing like a 400-pound guy rumbling down the street trying to go after a guy that just robbed a bank.
I'm just going to shoot you because I'll have a heart attack if I have to keep running after you. So this is going to be a really short episode of Cannon.
A little Ironside, if you will, falling off a mountain, but yet still on the wheelchair.
Yeah.
Still going after the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I thought he was dead in that episode, but somehow he came back, even though he was in a wheelchair, Ironside.
So I guess we've come to the conclusion that the Rockford Files did not have a peer, a television peer in that era.
No. No, I would say not.
No, watching a Barnaby Jones and thinking, wow, this is a better show than The Rockford Files. Vegas with Dan Tana, okay.
Great open, by the way.
Yeah.
About a 2.5-minute open for Vegas.
Spencer for Hire, not even close. Obviously later, not even close.
Spencer was okay. Hawk was even better. It was a spinoff Hawk, by the way. That lasted 2 episodes. His partner actually had a show. And it didn't work out too well. 122 episodes from 74 to 80.
Magic.
Remember it as a kid.
Magic.
When you heard that song, that particular theme had the perfect blend of guitar and harmonica. Now that is the perfect blend.
Yeah.
You won't get that anymore.
No, you won't. No, you won't. I'm trying to think who plays the harmonica well these days. Does anybody play the harmonica well?
People from your hometown, I'm sure.
How about John Popper from Blues Travelers?
There you go. There's one guy. But I mean,
listen, we're talking banjos where I come from, Jonathan. We're not talking harmonicas.
Are you kidding me?
You cannot play a harmonica successfully with the few number of teeth that most of my relatives have.
I think they're in the same family. You know?
But the lack of teeth does not affect your banjo picking. The lack of teeth affects the pressure you put on the harmonica, which in effect affects the outcome.
Back ahead now comes Sidney Crosby. Crosby tries to dance through. Crosby up with it there. Punched along to Jerome McGinley. Crosby scores! It's over! The gold medal to Canada!
Right there on NBC 5 Chicago.
Apropos, wasn't it that their team's best player scored the game winner?
Absolutely. Sidney Crosby coming through in a big way as Canada defeats the United States. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Sylvie off this week. I'm Jonathan Hood in for Mark, and our phone number 312-332-ESPN. Text your thoughts to 33776. We've had a lot of different topics we've thrown out there to you. You can also email your thoughts right into the inbox the old-fashioned way, snail mail. Waddle and Sylvie at ESPNChicago.com. You ever get letters, by the way?
Occasionally, yes. They're usually handwritten, and most of them have a correctional facility as the return address. Yeah, oh, yeah.
You're out of line, sir.
I'm not lying.
All right. The NHL was in full display. It was, as you mentioned, like an all-star game,
yeah,
with Canada against the United States. Barry Melrose from ESPN joining us on Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Barry, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. Give us your overall thoughts on last night's game with U.S. and Canada.
It was unbelievable. It was everything a hockey fan could hope for. It was the two North American teams, so that was the best possible matchup for TV in the United States. And, the great underdog American team playing against the powerhouse Canadian team who was supposed to win the gold medal, and it went into overtime. It was, if you love the NHL, if you love international hockey, if you love America, if you love Canada, you got to love the game last night. And I thought it was the perfect storm. I thought everything went as well as the NHL could have expected or possibly hoped for.
Barry, was the U.S. team accurately described as a massive underdog to this Canadian team, which was, you know, obviously an all-star lineup, but the American team also, you know, professional difference makers in the National Hockey League?
Well, I don't think they were, after the first game where they beat Canada, I don't think anyone considered them no chance of winning. I think they showed that they beat a Finnish team. They hammered a Finnish team, which doesn't get beat like that ever. Maybe at the start of the Olympics, I think, and I thought if they medaled, it would be a great Olympics for the Americans. But as the tournament went on, they kept getting better and better and better, and they had the best goaltender. Ryan Miller was the best goaltender in the tournament. He's been the best goaltender in the NHL, and he won the MVP of the tournament, deservedly so. So I don't think you could say they were a big underdog going into the final game. I think they were an underdog, but certainly not one that people didn't think had a chance of winning.
Barry Melrose with us on ESPN 1000 and Waddle and Sylvie. Where do you place Ryan Miller among the best goaltenders in a situation like this in the Olympics?
Well, he's making a name for himself. Ryan Miller was great. I thought he looked the best. You saw when he played Kiprusoff, he beat Kiprusoff. When he played Marty Brodeur, he beat Marty Brodeur. Outplayed them both, and really was better than Luongo in the last game. Saw a lot more harder shots than Luongo did. So, he was the best goaltender in the tournament by far. I don't even know who would be close to him. The Russian goaltenders certainly weren't. Swedish goaltenders, Lundqvist certainly wasn't. So Ryan Miller, I think, sent a message to the rest of the world that he's a big-time international goaltender, and he's been a great NHL goaltender for years also.
Barry, early in the broadcast, Eddie Olczyk said that he didn't feel that Luongo looked comfortable or confident. Did you have the same impression early on?
Well, he wasn't catching the puck. If you saw a lot of shots, he'd try and catch them. They'd hit his catching glove and bounce away, and the tying goal actually hit him right in the glove, and it bounced away, and they got a goal-scoring chance off that, and Parisi scored. So Luongo, he had a different sense than Miller. Miller had to, I think, win the game for the Americans. Luongo just had to not lose it for the Canadians. I think there was a different mindset. They didn't need Luongo to stuff 50 shots and stand on his head and be the best player in the game, whereas Miller had to be the best player in the game for the Americans. So, Luongo did look shaky. There's no doubt about that. But he won five games and he won the gold medal. That's right. Pretty good shaky.
It is. Barry, what does last night's game do for the National Hockey League overall?
Well, I think we got to watch now, because if the NHL doesn't get a bounce off of this, we'll never get a bounce. If we don't see an increase in ratings, if we don't see an increase in attendance, if we don't see an increase in jersey sales or memorabilia sales, we'll never get a bounce, because the whole world's talking about the NHL right now. The whole North America's talking about NHL. It was just a fantastic tournament. So, and I think they'll decide probably how the people react to this Olympics will go a long way in deciding if the NHL goes to the next Olympics.
What should the NHL do? Do you think they should go to the 2014 Olympics in Russia?
I would like them to, but I don't think they will. I think in 2014, when will the games be played? Are they going to be played in prime time, or will they be played in the middle of the night? That matters. People aren't going to stay up the next day. You know, hockey fans will, but the novice viewer won't turn in the next day if they already know the score. And again, they got to see how this bounce happens. What do they get out of this Olympics? Because this was the perfect Olympics. No Olympics can be better than this. It can't be any better than this. So if they get no bounce out of it or no increase in all the things I talked about, you know, why close your season down for 2.5 weeks?
Right. Barry, did the NHL make a huge mistake scheduling as well to have Colorado and Detroit playing tonight, a day after the Olympic gold medal game?
Well, it would have looked a lot worse if Detroit was in there, if the Swedes were in the finals, because there had been six Detroit Red Wings have to play the next day. They would have probably, like, you know, why have one team play? One, you know, they could have easily waited and gave everybody a day off, but it's going to be packed, you know, the rest of the season. You got 6 weeks left. You got 20 games in 6 weeks. Basically, every team's going to be playing two games a game every 2 days. It's going to be crazy down the stretch.
Barry, as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks, Barry.
My pleasure. And both the Chicago Blackhawks guys are great. I can guarantee that.
Yes, no question. Fantastic play by them.
Barry Melrose from ESPN with us here on Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
And don't leave Duncan Keith out of that mix as well in terms of talking about great play by Blackhawks players in that gold medal game.
We're going to hear from Darren Sharper coming up after SportsCenter. Just one quick thing, though. It doesn't matter where the Olympics are played, Tom. People will watch. This show is on delay. The Olympics is on delay. It was on tape delay where they had to edit it and have it for broadcast for prime time. It doesn't matter if it's in the middle of the night or not. If it's taped, people will watch.
Sure.
If it's interesting, it's watch. So he said that, well, they might not go because it's in Russia because of the time difference. It really doesn't matter. Everything's taped. Everything is delayed. So, you know, I don't get that. I disagree with them in that regard.
I just don't think the NHL is going to ask their guys to travel that far in the middle of a season.
Why?
We'll see what happens, but, boy, that's a brutal. I think it's a brutal travel schedule for the Colorado and Detroit teams, even for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's difficult for six Blackhawks to get back involved with their team tomorrow night. And now you're talking about, you know, going 14 hours away.
Well, then send the kids then. Send the kids.
I don't want to see the amateurs again. I really don't. Because you're not playing against level competition. Because the other countries aren't playing their amateurs.
Well, you know what? Guess what? You would have more of a buzz in your belly for what happened yesterday if it was the kids that beat Canada more so than the pros.
You're
say,
right.
Say if they won yesterday. Okay, you would be like, hey, it's a great deal. But if the kids...
If
the college kids would have defeated Canada, you'd be up in arms.
No, you're
you'd
right.
You'd be happy about it.
You're right. I would have more patriotic, as you called it, buzz in my belly.
Sure. There's
I had buzz in my belly anyway. I had chili yesterday. And it's not a pleasant buzz. I have issues.
Why are you sharing that?
I don't know.
I don't even know you, man. Why are
I think after today, you're not going to want to know me any further.
I don't even know you.
I swallowed a Crest White Strip as well this morning.
You told me that earlier.
Yeah, I know. That's the second time I've done it in 3 days.
Coming up next. Don't share that stuff with me. I don't even know you, man. Coming up next, Darren Sharper, New Orleans Saints, will join us next. Waddle and Sylvie, Jay Hood sit again on ESPN 1000.
I'm Bruce Levine.
Bruce Levine is with us in his spring training update on the Waddle and Sylvie show. Is brought to you by Jeff Vukovich. Vuk! For all your insurance needs, call Nationwide Insurance. He's the agent in Park Ridge for 30 years. Call Jeff Vukovich, 847-825-4783. Again, 847-825-4783.
Does Bruce know that you and I are going to write a tell-all book about him as well?
Would you like that, Bruce?
You wouldn't sell very many copies.
Oh, yes, we would.
You might want to put it in Braille as well.
I don't know what that means, so I'll just let it go.
Bruce, give us your thoughts over the weekend for the Cubs and White Sox, some of the news and notes.
Well, I think the big news out of Sox camp is the fact that they're going with a rotation of 1 and 2 with Burley and Peavy. And, you know, I reported last Friday, Ozzie told me that he was going to mix and match 3, 4, and 5 the beginning of the year. I didn't quite understand that. And then Don Cooper reiterated the fact that they're going to match up with their rotation early on to see, you know, for instance, if John Danks pitches extremely well against Minnesota and that's the third game of the year, he might go. If it's Floyd, he might go. So there's some interesting ways that they're looking at it. They're not going to announce what they're doing with that rotation for a while. But I think I've never heard this before. of just matching up with your 3-4-5 early on. But nonetheless, that's what they're saying. Cup camp pretty much is about good health. And Ted Lilly, you know, again, being knocked back a little bit with a virus and projected to probably be coached on May 1st and April 15th coming back in the fight between four different guys now for that fourth and fifth spot in the rotation.
Back to the White Sox for just a second, Bruce. What do you make of even the suggestion that the Sox would be interested in Adrian Gonzalez and a part of the deal that would bring him to Chicago would include a Gordon Beckham?
I think that's ridiculous.
What I thought when I read it.
In my mind, there's no chance that they trade Gordon Beckham for anybody. Gordon Beckham is going to be the face of this organization for the next 10 years, and I expect him to be truly a solid performer. Is he going to be a 350 hitter with 30 home runs? I don't know that, but I can tell you that there's no reason why he's not a 300 hitter with 20 to 25 home runs and 80 to 100 RBIs, hitting second, third, or wherever ever you want him to be. And no, I just don't see it. Now, would they ask for Adrian Gonzalez? Would they ask for Beckham for Gonzalez? Absolutely. And they'd ask for Daniel Hudson, and they'd ask for Danks, Jordan Danks. Sure, they'd ask for those guys, and you'd have to give up a lot. But, you know, for Adrian Gonzalez, you know, you'd have to give a lot. I wouldn't give up Gordon Beckham.
Bruce Levine with us here on Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Jay Hood in for Sylvie today. I think there's question marks on both sides of town regarding the bullpen. What is the latest on Angel Guzman for the Cubs? And then on the Sox side of the ledger, are they still looking for a reliever?
Well, they are. So are the Cubs. Cubs are looking for more than one if they can find one. And, you know, Jason Frazier of Toronto is someone the Cubs fans can continue to look at. We've been blogging about it on ESPN Chicago for over 8 weeks, you know, in my blog about the fact that they've looked at Frazier, they've looked at Gregerson of San Diego, and when the games begin here Wednesday and Thursday, that's where the Cub scouts will be, looking at San Diego, looking at Toronto, checking out to see if these guys are throwing well and if they're going to be available. That's the market they're going in. The White Sox are looking for the same thing. They want to add another sixth, seventh inning pitcher to the mix. They are certainly more under the radar, but, you know, a guy like Scott Downs from Toronto is somebody that they've looked at and really kind of like, and some of the other pitchers that we've named along the way as well. So Guzman is on the hill today, throwing for the first time off the mound since he got hurt. We'll see later on. They will have some reports on him.
Bruce, one guy who can't fly under the radar because he's just too darn big to fly under the radar is Carlos Silva. Has he impressed anybody in Cubs camp yet?
Yeah, you know, I was just talking to Lou Piniella about it, you know, just a couple of minutes ago, and he said that, you know, he's got a great opportunity here. He says he has all the stuff in the world. The question is whether, you know, his desire is going to be to take off that 12 or 14 pounds extra that he has and go back and be the pitcher that he was when he got that four-year, $48 million contract from Seattle coming off of a couple of good seasons with Minnesota. Certainly last year, injury plagued all year. The year before, 4-15 indicate a guy who kind of let himself go after signing a contract. We'll see if he wants to come back and be in the mix. Otherwise, it's going to probably be Samardzija and Gorzolani. Those are my 1-2 or 2-1s as far as probably having the lead as far as going for the fourth and fifth spot in the rotation for the Cubs.
Bruce, you mentioned in your reports that it's been a little rain in Arizona. What does that do for the schedule for either the Cubs or the Sox?
Well, it backed them up a little bit. Yesterday it was pretty much a total washout for everybody. The Cubs were done by 10:30. The White Sox were done by 11:30, and the pitchers didn't get much in. You know, this is a departure from last year. We had an extra week of spring training because of the World Baseball Classic last year, so everybody was really ready to go. But, you know, as of this weekend, there'll be less than a month left in the season, and nobody has pitched yet. You know, the game starts on Thursday, and everybody will be throwing two innings first and foremost. So we'll see if they can catch up and be ready with a workload of about 100 pitches by April 5th when the season starts.
You can read Bruce's blog on ESPNChicago.com. And, Bruce, as always, we appreciate your time.
Thanks, Bruce.
And your friendship. See you guys.
Bruce Levine with us here on ESPN 1000. Spring trading updates. You like that?
I did.
Yeah. Brought to you by Jeff Vukovich for all your insurance needs. Call Nationwide Insurance agent Jeff
Vukovich. Matt McGuire looks on, wondering if this is the at-bat. Tuesday, September 8th, that Mark McGwire moves one place in front of Roger Maris. Down the left field line. Is it enough? Gone! There it is! 62! Touch first, Mark. You are the new single-season home run king.
Right there on Fox, the record breaker. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000 and ESPNChicago.com. Along with Tom Waddle, I'm Jonathan Hood, in for Mark Silverman. On the line with us now, the author of a new book, Mark McGwire and the Truth Behind Baseball's Worst Kept Secret, Jay McGwire, joining us here on ESPN 1000 and ESPNChicago.com. Jay, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're doing very well. First and foremost, why did you decide to write this book?
Well, I've set the record straight with Mark and what actually happened in the years of 94, 95, and 96, and the transformation went on with his body. But more than that, my own story, how I got involved in steroids and lived the lifestyle as a bodybuilder and basically led me into a deep, dark place in my life that ultimately God saved my life for it.
Jay, did your relationship with your brother go south before you decided to write this book, or was it a result of that?
No, that happened before.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened years ago, with 02.
So when he caught wind of the fact that you were actually going to write this book, as you said, in a large part for yourself, what type of response did he have to that?
Nothing. I haven't heard from him. I haven't, you know, talked to him since 02. All these years I've been, you know, we've had an understanding that I, you know, keep quiet, don't say anything, and I have, but, you know, since I've been, you know, in the gyms, I'm where the athletes are hanging out all the time. I used to get asked all the time about Mark and his usage, and I kept on denying. And I was getting conviction of the heart, and I wanted to speak the truth. But, you know, more than that, just my story alone, my testimony and what happened to me when I was on it. I wanted to really help these kids out there and show them how dangerous these drugs can be.
Jay McGwire with us on Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Why ultimately did McGwire take steroids?
When?
Why?
Why? Well, he's right about this. You know, it was because of, you know, health reasons. You know, we got him on the GH and the DECA, and that's going to really help your knees, every part of your joint in your body. And over time, in the next couple of years, we introduced him to more, you know, testosterone. Eventually he's going to, you know, gain lean muscle mass and strength and then create a lot of endurance.
But Jay, when you hear Mark say that he didn't think what he was taking really enhanced his performance, how do you respond to that?
He knew it was going to enhance his performance. I mean, his strength doubled. So in the gym alone, by the workouts alone, he was going to get results regardless, but the steroids do help you get there faster. It's a shortcut. But the program that we set up on, the weight training, the weight resistant training, it was awesome. I go in details in the book about this, you know, and Mark did really put his effort in and he worked hard to get his body to change, you know. So, a healthy Mark's going to hit a lot of home runs.
Does it become an addictive situation? I mean, for someone, as you mentioned, that you use these substances as well, you get used to feeling and looking a certain way. And obviously the results that Mark was experiencing, did it lead him to actually rely on these things?
At the beginning, I would think so. I mean, yes, I go in real great detail about this and how the drugs kind of change your attitude. The confidence that that I got out of and Mark out of is tremendous. Part of the thing is that's where you start getting depending on it, you know? And that's what happened to me. It was a crutch. It was a ball and chain that I continued. I didn't want to get off steroids, you know? I love the feeling. Steroids work. They're powerful. And that's the thing is. And then these athletes are going to use it to get the result they want. And it's hard to get off of it because you feel like you can't do it without it.
The book is entitled Mark and Me, Mark McGwire and the Truth Behind Baseball's Worst Kept Secret. His brother, Jay McGwire, with us on Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000 and ESPNChicago.com. Did you see Mark McGwire's initial conversation with Bob Costas?
Yes.
What was true and what was false that you heard in that interview with Costas?
Well, it was true about how he justified and how he came to the conclusion of using it to get him healthy. But he didn't tell the full story about, you know, that he knows he's going to get stronger and add, you know, lean muscle mass. You know, it's unbelievable the way Mark responded to the program.
think about this, guys. Gained 30 pounds of lean muscle mass and became more flexible at 260 pounds instead of he was 230 years prior.
It's not possible without the use of performance enhancers, obviously.
No, it is possible. The program, I mean, you have to work hard for it. It's just going to take you longer. So the program, let's say, 3-year time, right? If you did it naturally, probably 6 years, 5 or 6 years.
Is there a point where the body, regardless, I mean, everyone's different body type, where if you see someone that has tendon injuries, your first thought should be that this guy is taking performance enhancers because the muscle mass cannot be handled by the tendons?
That's true, over time, yes. DECA, when I was on it, man, your joints and tendons never hurt. It's amazing. And once you get off of it, and once the body starts purifying itself, you start feeling the aches and the pains in the knees and the hips and the shoulders, it does come back and hit you.
Jay, is it your, do you believe that Mark had to make the admission he made to get back into Major League Baseball as the Cardinals hitting coach?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think Mark really made this worse. You know, coming forward, 2005 at the Congress hearings, you know, he looked weak there. I mean, he didn't say anything, you know, you're just guilty and, you know, that dark covering him all the time, everywhere he went. So, you know, I'm glad to see that he came clean. You know, it's not the full story. I tell the full story in the book and what actually happened. You guys understand what Mark's frame of mind was. I mean, he was down. He was a broken athlete when I dealt with him. I was prime of my bodybuilding. He was broken down. It was a perfect storm.
Tony La Russa is the manager for Mark McGwire with the A's, with the Cardinals. He says he didn't know anything about steroids being in his locker room. Do you believe him?
Yeah, it's hard to not, you know, it's hard. I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, I know he's probably not going to confront the guys, but in the back of the mind, he has to be thinking something's going on. You know, it's obvious, you know, but, he's a manager and they produce and these guys hit home runs and, you know, RBIs, and that's what it comes down. You know, bottom line, Mark put, you know, fans in the seats, you know, and it was tremendous. And we all got caught up into it, right, guys?
Well, the game came back due to that home run chase. I don't think there's any question about that. What has Jose Canseco said that isn't actually true, Jay? And it is the biggest thing that he has mentioned is when Mark actually began taking performance enhancers, because I believe he says late 80s, you say early 90s, correct?
Yeah, I know Mark dabbled in some stuff a couple weeks, 89 or 90, I'm not sure. But that's nothing. You don't see steroids. That's what I mean. You got to read my book. I'm gonna educate you guys if you read my book about drugs and how it works. It's a long-term effect. You just don't take steroids before batting practice and think you're going to hit home runs. Steroids is a long-term effect. You won't see it till months down the line. And especially you have to train right. I know guys that train, wrong and they take a whole bunch of steroids and they don't look good at all. So, you know, the program is huge. And question about Jose, Mark and Jose are completely different people. There's no way Mark's going to trust a guy named Jose. I conversations with him, and I just, there's no way. I don't see those two, first of all, in the bathroom stall together. You know, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Last thing we have for you, we appreciate your time. Will there ever be a reconciliation with you and your brother?
I would hope so. You know, when the dust settles, guys, and I don't know if you guys read the book. There, you know, this book is not damaging to Mark at all. You know, and a lot of people are writing that it is. It's not. You got to read the book. I love my brother. I'm just telling you the true story of what happened. And, you know, I actually praise him and I defend him well in this book.